Welcome. I'm Dr. Moose Herring, orthopedic sports medicine specialist.
I'm Dr. Rob Green, sports chiropractor, coach, trusty sidekick. We are lifetime endurance athletes.
We are eager lab rats.
We are maker of many mistakes.
We are family-focused sports medicine docs that are balancing family, work, and fitness and are enjoying the ride. While we are sports medicine professionals, this podcast is not part of our professional responsibilities. There's no doctor-patient or coach-athlete relationship developed in this podcast. We have no financial support from any outside resources. The only support we get is from our fantastic wives that sit back and look at us in complete dismay.
Welcome to Hub Life. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to Hub Life. Moose, how you doing?
Happy spring. Pollen is out.
Oh, man. I know. I'm probably a little raspy. I just got back from a ride outside, and you took a picture of my bike with all the pollen on it. And like, that's what's in your lungs.
I said, you need to show this to your physician because this is what's coating your lungs.
Cycling is bad for your health. So pollen, I'm a little, pollen. This is my jazz voice going. So if it sounds a little raspy.
It's supposed to be, he's just trying to be sexy.
Yeah. Yeah. And if I cough, sexy. Poof, little green smoke comes out.
Right.
But man, what's going on with you? What's been happening?
Nothing. Big week. Boston tomorrow.
Yeah. Boston. Marathon Patriots Day.
Yeah. On Mondays, all the people running get the day off.
Dude, I mean, the town shuts down.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a day of celebration.
Schools are out. It's crazy.
Yeah. Now. Dude, that's so cool. And
I'm just hoping all those runners, the 30,000 runners, listen to our podcast and know. Ooh. Don't go out fast.
So I didn't purposely say this, but I did because I sent him a message, but I thought it was, I wrote it. I was like, I'm going to have to use this more often. I said, marathon punishes impatience and Boston executes impatience. Cause we were, I was talking to Chad about pacing and just like, dude, cause he's in a really good spot for it.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, it's already hard enough to do long course and be impatient, but like Boston, and we covered that enough on our
big deal.
Episode before about those first 16 miles, especially those first 4 miles.
Yeah.
Patience.
Yeah. Patience. That's exciting. And, for those of you that are early risers, Singapore T100 has been Saturday and Sunday. So if you got to bed at 4:30 and you turn on your YouTube, you can see the live feed of the women on Saturday and men today. It looked hot,
really?
Hot, scorching hot.
Singapore. Ugh.
And so they swam in some not so nice bay, and the bike ride was on the road, and they ran. But I mean, just some of the performances were unbelievable. Ashley Gentle ran down Lucy Charles Barkley, I don't know the exact number, but like 2.5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
On the run.
Jeez.
It's amazing. I mean, and there were some other just strong female performances. In the men this morning, Sam Long was last out of the water.
Last. Sam was?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was last.
Out. Why? Did he lose his goggles? Did he have, what?
He, on his post-race, commentary, he said he wanted to bike and run, and he knew exactly the right effort, and that was effort. And some, I think it was Jan Frodeno was talking to him, and he was like, you know, you were the last fish out of the water.
Yeah.
And Sam Long said, no, I was the first land creature out of the water, because all these guys were like fish.
Yeah.
But it was amazing, because he was last out of the water, 4 minutes down, and rode and ran through the field and ended up second.
Wow. And 4 minutes is a long time.
For that crew.
In that distance.
It's amazing. Yeah,
and that crew.
And then there was a guy who was a wild card, Yuri Kulin, who he took a lead on the bike and never gave it up.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know really anything about that guy at all.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Then Sam lay low for a little bit, was leading on the bike, and then started yakking, so he stopped.
Yeah.
Alistair Bentley tripped. He can get off his bike from going into T2.
Oh, really?
And tweaked his calf, so he was out. So practice your transition.
Man, those Brits are brittle, man.
Yeah, they are.
Those Brits are brittle. It's funny. I have no clue what's going on. Mary Beth, my wife, was out of town for a week and sports after the weekdays and getting through, which was awesome. It's kind of great because then the kids have nobody but me to lean on.
Yeah.
So well, I shouldn't say that. My parents are here and they're amazing. But like I become the main support. So I'm like, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But when it comes to current events, I am clueless. So that's kind of cool.
No, you're not. Your current event is Libby and Holland are alive, fed, dressed, and getting the job done every day.
I will give you the breakdown of the soccer games of the 10 and under and the 12 and under.
Yep.
Yeah, no, for sure. So that's great. So that's pretty neat. But gosh, super hot race and you know, some unique things, man.
So Sam's been second in Miami and second in Singapore.
Yeah.
And for those of you that follow the sport, he was second to Lionel Sanders in Oceanside last week. Yeah. So he raced a half.
He's got to be frustrated.
Strong enough to finish second to Lionel.
Yeah, yeah.
And he flies to Singapore and finishes strong another T100.
Yeah.
Dude, that dude's a freak.
Yeah.
It's a freak.
What's your sense on T100? Do you think it's gaining momentum? Do you think people are paying attention?
I can't tell. I'm paying attention because I'm really interested in that. And that distance, that 100K race, I think is a good distance.
Pretty cool, yeah.
And they're putting a lot of money in it, and that's forced Ironman to put more money into their pros.
Yeah,
I don't think competition's a bad thing.
Oh, it's great, dude. It's good, nothing but great things already. I'm just wondering, like, I hope it sticks, and I hope it, because there's been some competitors that come into Ironman, and Ironman's been able to fend them off. I think Ironman's in a vulnerable spot now, so maybe T100, but I'm interested. I don't know yet, because in my world's just full tilt with family life and everything, so I'm not the best. But is there an audience that's really kind of reaching out for it? I hope there is.
I don't know.
I really hope there is.
But if you watch the YouTube commentary, it's decent.
Yeah.
They have Jan Frodeno as one, who's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great way to develop young talent because they invite 20 pros and all of them get paid at least $1,000.
Yeah.
So you have people in, and at one point on the bike, like four out of the top seven were wild cards. Wow. So these guys, they get their wild card slot and they're all in.
Yeah.
Like this may be my day.
That's pretty cool.
So I think it's good. And it's good for the development. And that distance, I think, is a good in between Olympic distance racing, where the guys are running 30 minute 10Ks and swimming ridiculously fast and riding in a pack, to to Ironman. It's a good intermediate distance for those guys to step up.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. It's just interesting. I think the sustainability comes from the age groupers, though. I mean, if you get the age groupers to come and participate, and then you can get
more
numbers.
It's age grouper rate racing or what the numbers are. I know for the States, it's Las Vegas, and
Miami. Vegas, and there's one other one, right? There's
no idea.
Thought there's three. Maybe the other one's like Canada or something. I can't remember. I had to look it up. But maybe that's the problem, though. I don't know. We're doing a podcast in Endurance Life, and we're in the Tri Geek world, and I don't know. So I mean, I'm totally intrigued by it, and I think there's a lot of like cool things, and it's been great because Ironman's already had to come to the table with more money for the pros
in a series,
and it's changed it in a series, but it needs to stick, and I really hope it does.
Yeah.
But going back to Boston, man, a big shout out. We got four Hub Life family members out there. So Chad is racing. Jennifer is racing. She got highlighted by Boston Marathon. Awesome. So she was on their Instagram. So that was pretty cool. And then Tamami's out there racing. Mo's out there racing. Awesome. And, Rebecca Angus, Dr. Angus is out there racing. Nice.
Good for them.
So there's a pretty good crew out there, and excited for a big shout out to them. It's victory. Even if you don't, right? The one thing, the biggest tip we get for everybody is, like, even if you implode and things go back, just start smiling.
Enjoy the day.
Just smile and be like, you know what? It's a victory lap. Yeah. You got there.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. Hopefully they're going to do great and have the days that they want. But if you don't, that's what we sign up for, right? Exactly right. All right, I had a good idea for this podcast. We'll see if it works out or not. But I was going to approach, see what you think of this, Moose. I was going to approach race day nutrition and maybe just a little bit of things leading into it from a coaching perspective, not going in the deep dive of, like, you know, getting lost in the weeds of really complex things. And, you know, I'm going to try not to do that, and hopefully we'll try not to do that. But in a way to, you know, something I find a lot, whether it's patients in clinic, or it's even athletes that, you know, from beginners to like veterans that have been doing it for a long time, is their strategy or lack of strategy of their nutrition.
Right.
And you know, the further you race, the more it becomes important. Like in Ironman, we have a saying that there's four disciplines: there's swim, there's bike, there's run, there's nutrition.
Right.
Nutrition is just as important. Marathon, Boston Marathon's tomorrow, and nutrition's important for that. You know, it's right. It's a, you know, depending on how fast you run, it can be a, you know, 2.5 hour race, could be a 3 hour race, could be a 4 hour race, 5 hour race, 6 hour race. But you know, it's really important. So I wanted to, you know, try to keep it simple, and we'll go into some complex things, I think, as we go in there. But at the end of the day, if you're going to look at your nutrition, and I would argue that I think race day nutrition is really, really easy, except for it's also really, really hard. The easy part is the formula is essentially what's the structure that it makes reasonable sense. And right. There's a pretty kind of clear range of formula. I think the thing that gets really tricky is what works for you,
right?
What works for you within it? Have you tested it? Have you tried it? You know, are you making some classic mistakes? Are you dialing in? And here's the other complex part about nutrition is once you got it, it evolves.
Right.
My nutrition for long course is different than what it used to be. I got to change around a little bit.
Yep.
You know, your body evolves, it adapts, but it comes down to what is the simple formula. So I think if maybe we cover what the simple formula is, mm-hmm. And then, you know, maybe give some examples of like what we do. Mm-hmm. We don't have any sponsors for this. We don't make anything from anybody. If we talk about products, we talk about them because we've been doing this for over 2 decades.
Yep.
And we use them, and we'll give some reasons why we use them.
Yep.
And it works for us. It may not work for you, but at the end of the day, you got to find that out. And that's what I'd like to cover today, because I think there's so many people out there that have sort of maybe a misconception of what they need to do with nutrition. They've overcomplicated it. They've not given it enough respect. They do it reactively, not proactively. I think there's all kinds of extremes. I think people are on one extreme or the other.
Right.
And I think maybe finding that middle ground and keeping it simple. And that's today's goal, is to try to make that nutrition relatively simple, mm-hmm. right? Don't overcomplicate it. Make sure it works for you. We're going to stress this. You're going to hear this word probably 100 times. Make this podcast a drinking game if you want to. Anytime you hear the word practice,
right.
Take a drink, but take a drink of electrolyte, right? Don't drink beers.
Right.
But practice, 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 right? We don't have any sponsorships with, you know, we talk about UCAN, we'll talk about Infinite, we'll talk about, you know, Precision Hydration and different things that are out there that we use, or Moose talk about the things that Dr. Herring, that you use, yeah. And they work well for us. But the key again is what works for you.
Right.
So I think that would be the goal of today. What do you think?
I think simply looking at it.
Yeah.
Right. If you look at a certain event you're going to do.
Yeah.
You can look at the assumed amount of calories you need to do that event.
Yeah.
And you can assume what you're going to have to take in, because simply put, our job is to take in carbs.
Yep.
That is broken down to glucose. Glucose is broken down in the muscle cells to form ATP. ATP makes us go.
Yeah, but it can be glucose, can be fructose, and can be there's.
It's a sugar.
It's sugar.
It's basically sugar.
Yep.
And if you run out of that, right?
Yeah.
Then your body ain't going to function.
Yeah.
So how much do you have to accomplish your goal?
Yeah.
That's simply put.
Yeah. And I think it starts with, as you said, you know how many calories. I think it starts with, you know how much time you're going to be out there. Mm-hmm. I think time has everything to do with nutrition.
Right.
And then we have caloric windows. So, right, we'll look at, I think, three things today. I think there's three things to account for. And I think we're going to start simply with calories. Mm-hmm. Calories is number one. And then, you know, I'm going to separate those with hydration and then also electrolytes. So it's two and three. And I sort of intertwine two and three together. So we'll try to cover all three of those. But I think maybe a good way to start is the simplicity of what, and we'll get into like breakfast and then what you do for race day. But like if you have breakfast in the morning, right, mm-hmm. you stabilize your blood sugar, you should have some proteins and everything in with what you eat. And mm-hmm. I'm just going to get over you and we'll come back to it.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to dive into it. So just breakfast, 2-3 hours before you have your race, right? That stabilizes your blood sugar, that fuels you up. And then 30 minutes before your event, you start to have carbohydrate, whether it's a gel or a goo, and you sip on it. You don't force it down. And that, to me, tops off your fuel, right? View your body like a Ferrari. You got to have a full gas tank. Mm-hmm. When you exercise, if you're especially in triathlon or in long course running, if you're not doing something less than an hour, you don't need any more fuel. after that, you got all the fuel. Like when you've topped up 30 minutes before that race and you've topped up your fuel, the next hour, you don't need any fuel. You have the fuel that's in your system. After an hour hits, and arguably that can be 90 minutes, that can be, you know, 60 minutes, it can go a little bit longer, but I like to look at it and say, hey, an hour into it's when you should start to have a strategy. So if the race is going to be over an hour, I think that there's got to be at least a little bit of a fueling strategy that goes along with it. But especially when you get into marathon and we're going to a few hours, you could do an Olympic triathlon. We can talk about some different distances that go with it, but essentially you have breakfast 30 minutes before, you top up your carbohydrate, and now you're good to go. You got an hour of fuel. And then every hour thereafter, you need to know that you got a caloric window you should try to hit. And that comes through practice. That can be anywhere from maybe 150 calories to 400 calories, kind of depending on what you're doing. That's a really broad range. But reality is, like, you can get calories in and digest them slowly, right, over a period of time. Don't go 2 hours and try to rush in 400 calories, 500 calories. You should have a strategic plan after that first hour. So for me, I look at it and say, hey, okay, after the first hour, I don't need anything. Hour one to two, I need 200 calories an hour. Hour two to three, I need 200 calories an hour. Hour three to four, I need 200 calories an hour. What calories work for me? Now, some people can do well with 150 calories per hour. Some can have 300 calories per hour. Some people can even push up to that 400. But a lot of people start to get gastric distress. We'll dive into kind of where you land with it. But reality is, once you've stabilized blood sugar, you got an hour. After that hour, you need to have a strategic plan, and you better have practiced it and started to find out what works for you, accounting for what that pace is, right? Your fueling needs and your digestion and what you can tolerate at different paces is different. And then the likes, the dislikes, and making sure that you do some simple things along the way to make sure that your body can process those. But that's really what it comes down to, right? You got to fuel the system. If you're not topping up the gas tank, you're going to run out of gas. Now, we're burning fats and carbs. So carbs aren't the bad guy, but you got to be able to have carbohydrates to come in and supplement that along the way, or else you're going to bonk. A lot of times you see somebody fall off the rails at mile 18 and maybe they paced everything well, and you ask them about their nutrition and they go, yeah, no, my nutrition was good. And you go, what did you do? Yeah, about 2 hours into it, I had a goo. So I was good. And you're like, 2 hours into it, dude, you're petering down. Like, you know, that may not have been a pacing thing. It may not have been. So you're on E, right? And your body is struggling. So I think nutrition is really simple, and I think you can make it that simple. So now if we come back, that's going to be an overview of what we do. Well, let's start to look at it. What do we do when we look at calories? And I think if we look at calories first and then we circle back around and we'll talk about some hydration electrolytes, what do you do race day? Right? What do you do race day to make sure, if we're going to look at breakfast, when you look at breakfast, Moose, what do you think about when you think about breakfast?
Well, I go over those same things for 2-3 hours before. I use You Can. We've used that for a long time. And they used to call it Super Starch. Now they call it Live Steady. It's
I didn't know they changed this. I always call it Super Starch. Yeah, they don't call it Super Starch anymore.
No, it's called Live Steady now. It's a fancy name that means a steady state glucose control.
It's forever in my mind a superstarch.
It can be a superstarch. But it's long lasting energy for 9 minutes. I like caffeine because that helps me do what I need to do before the race. I'm an oatmeal kind of guy before, so and I have no idea what that calorie count in, yeah. Count count is, but that's habit.
Yeah, and we've done it for so long. You know, that's the cool thing is, like, we've found what works for us. There's a habit. There's a routine. There's also some comfort with it. But if you're looking at it, generally speaking, and again, these are ranges, right? Mm-hmm. That means, you know, it can be different for everyone. It can be different for you at different times. Like my breakfast intake is sort of different for an Olympic triathlon than it is for an Ironman triathlon.
It's very different.
Yeah, man. And so the longer you go, the more important nutrition starts to become. Yeah. But I look at breakfast and we're going to look at a range. It can be anywhere from maybe 500 to 1,000 calories. It sort of depends. Depends on the athlete, depends on what duration you're doing. Sometimes it's environmental. I think it's important, if we just look at macros, that you have your carbs. We all know that, but you got to have protein mixed in there, right? You got to stabilize your blood sugar. Yep. You got to get your fuel in. You don't want to overeat. Don't make yourself sick. But a lot of times, I don't know about you, we're waking up really early in the morning. I'm not like one to eat a ton. So, yep. You know, something, even if I did, I mean, I can't promote UCAN enough, especially the UCAN with protein for breakfast. That to me, I don't use their carbohydrate drink. I don't like the taste of it. A lot of people do, but I use the UCAN with protein, and especially in a really long course, I'm going to put two servings in there. And that to me really sets a solid base that anything else I eat is sort of bonus. So for me, two servings of UCAN, a light breakfast. And that usually is like oatmeals with some, overnight oats with some Greek yogurt and blueberries. Mm-hmm. I really like that. And that's 2 to 3 hours before your race time, at least 2 hours before. So if you're going to race at 6, try to get up and start to get some fuel in you by 4, right? If you're going to race at, 10, make sure that you're getting that breakfast in by 7 to 8 o'clock in the morning or so. That way you got chance to get it in, able to digest. Caffeine's great. I think one of the reasons we love caffeine too is it gets the bowels moving a little bit. Yeah. So you can get moving. We'll talk about hydration after we're sort of done with the caloric windows, but I make sure to have an Element is another supplement that drink that I highly recommend to people all the time. It's 1,000 milligrams of electrolyte built into there without any sugars. And that's been huge. And we'll talk about that when we get into the electrolyte part, but that makes it part of my breakfast as well. And then get some caffeine if you're a coffee drinker. But that's breakfast. And we've been doing it for so long, we really sort of know what works. And so for breakfast, if you're going to have a big race, you try to simulate race day conditions. So remember that, if you're going to do triathlon, that big, long ride that you're going to do, wake up a couple of those mornings and start to practice what you're going to do race day, right? If you're running a marathon before, some of your long runs, get up and simulate your breakfast. Because what you think you like and things make sense, an hour into the run, you might second guess a little bit. Hey, did I overeat? Did I undereat? Hey, I wouldn't even look at calories per se. I sort of put those windows in there. I would look at sort of what you're eating, what's the purpose behind it, get your carbs, get your proteins in, eat to a bit of hunger, get your hydration in, and then start to see how you feel on those training runs and then start to refine it. Like I said, I think it's really simple. Get that in. The hard part is you got to find what works for you.
Right.
And I think that's where the complication comes in, but have a structure to it. I think if there's one big theme from this podcast is start to have some structure.
Practice it.
And do it in the months leading into the race. Because how many races have you seen ruin from GI distress or have bonking or overeating or, just all things GI. So that's what I think about looking at breakfast. What are your thoughts?
I think you're right. I think you have to be used to it. I think it has to give you a good, strong, saturate your muscle cells with glucose. It has to be in long enough so you can have your morning constitutional, whatever you need to do before you get that wetsuit on. I just think you're preloading the system.
Yeah, and it's starting to get into the lower GI system. It's not sitting in the upper GI system, so you need time to digest that. And again, here's part of that drinker element on every time we say practice it, man. Yeah. A lot of people practice it. And practice it at race pacing simulations. It's different, right? Eating something is different at different paces. And I think that's really important. Yep. And I think that's breakfast, man. I think breakfast is pretty simple that way. Easy breakfast, 2-3 hours before.
Very individual, though.
It is. That's the complexity of it.
What works for the pros may not work for you.
No. And what worked for you 2 years ago may not work for you
right
now.
System's different.
Yeah. System's different, man. So that's breakfast. Any other thoughts of breakfast before we leave it?
Good.
So now we've had breakfast, right? And we're usually a little antsy. In our tri world, we got plenty of time to get our stuff together, get down to transition set up. Running's a little bit different because there's less administrative stuff to do. So there's a lot of downtime. I'm usually just sort of sipping on something. I'll have some water, forcing nothing down. I don't really have a structure to it. My structure was breakfast. I think structure from there is what just sort of feels right. Don't force anything. But then the next window that I look at is 30 minutes before race goes off, right? Have carbohydrate, have about 100 to 150 gram, calories, not grams. Oh, good Lord, don't do that in grams. 100 to 150 calories or so in a carbohydrate. And I typically sip on infinite drink. I don't do gels. I tend to, why? Because I practice it. I tend to, even if I chase with water, I tend to burp those up a little bit earlier into it. My stomach does better with just fluids, but 30 minutes in. And the purpose of that is to just get your blood sugar back to its maximum. You're about to go. We look at sugars. We look at sugars in life. And a lot of times people are like, oh, stay away from sugars. Reality is that's huge for us, right? Once we're exercising, insulin's suppressed. We're running off of carbohydrates. It's protein's going to do you no good. You know, I've seen all kinds of different things. Protein's not doing anything. You know, fats, you're already burning the fats that you got. You got enough fats to exercise for a couple of weeks. You need the carbohydrates. You're going to be using both carbohydrates and fats. You got all the fats you need, but your carbohydrate stores are going to be scarce. And hopefully with good training, again, we won't get into the tangents. I hope you're metabolically efficient. That's where we do different testing. If you've been sort of improper with your diet, and your body's not functioning well, your training's not been good, and you've not been practicing things, and you may not be, but if you are, having that sugar 30 minutes before. And the key thing with that is, like, if you're having gel, make sure you chase it with water, right? And drink a bottle of water with it and just sip on it. If you're drinking a caloric drink, then sip on it. Usually there's a nervous energy. So you're just sort of sipping on it and it's just going to be gone before you know it. If you're forcing it down, and I've made that mistake before because I've been running late to like a local race and I've shoved something down, you're going to taste that later on because it went in too quick. So just, even though I say 100, 150, maybe you have a 100 calorie bottle and you got 3/4 of it in, you're like, but I didn't get 100. Be like, no, you drank to what you needed. Your body's naturally doing it. And you've just topped off the tank, right? You've topped the tank off, right? Practice this again, right? Because you don't know what you're going to feel. And you're not going to sure what's work. I know what works for me. What works for me may not work for you. I love Infinite. We'll get into what osmolality is. The osmolality for Infinite really does a lot of wonders for me, where I can get some higher level caloric things in, but have it diluted enough where I can digest it. So I know it works for me. And if I'm having any sort of problem with it, then I'm going to relook at it. Things I used to use, sometimes it's evolved. I've got to change flavors of things quite often. Sometimes I get burned out from flavors. Yeah. But that's the stuff you got to be able to practice. How about you? What do you think?
So I usually use an electrolyte drink, a light scratch or, you know, electrolyte drink for the hour before. Sip on it slow. It's in a throwaway bottle. I usually drop it right before I go through the arch because I like to keep it.
Yeah.
And then I'll put in usually one edge gel. I've started using it. The edge gel, because I can take it without water. It's super easy to start.
Yeah.
And, you know, the science behind that is if you load your system with some type of sugar, there is an insulin response. Mm-hmm. And the insulin response pulls that sugar, whatever it is, into the muscle. And now you're ready to roll.
Yep.
So now you have your new, from that sugar you have preloaded, hopefully half an hour before the race. You had an insulin response, and that insulin response pulls that fluid where it needs to be.
Yep. And that's why, and we'll get into the hydration side of it, that what you're sipping on the scratch, the calories are helping with the hydration side of it. Mm-hmm. And we'll count them as calories a little bit, but that's more for the hydration.
Different purpose.
Different purpose. So when we circle back around an hour into it, it's just another way to keep your hydration at a premium. And that's super important, but you bring in the UCAN gel, because now we're going to use that as a caloric kind of pull in as well. So that way you're getting a bit of the best of both worlds. So,
I think the other thing you got to worry about a little bit to encouraging people to take gels before, a lot of the response with the gels is a spike and then a decline, a rapid decline. So if you take a gel 30 minutes before, and so I've seen people take those Roctane or caffeinated gels for the jolt, right?
Yeah.
If you're doing an hour swim or even a 28 minute swim, you're going to get some hypoglycemia there, get on the bike, irregardless of what you've preloaded during breakfast.
Well, that's where I would say, even from like, see how you feel coming out of it. Do you feel that? Do you feel that dip? Do you feel, because what you've seen when you've had the constant glucose monitor is different gels did different things to you.
Absolutely.
So there's not the right gel. Hey, we use this gel. You should use this gel. Hey, this gel promotes it. This is the gel that beats all gels. Reality is is different for you.
Yeah, it feels. Yeah.
And so there's some gels that give you different spikes, even though the ingredients look the same. Mm-hmm. But again, going back to what we talked about before, which is some intuition, how do you feel when you come out of it? Do you feel pretty good? Great, probably in a pretty good spot, right? It's almost like nowadays we've got so much testing stuff that it's got to pass the test part, and we mm-hmm. have forgotten to go, well, dude, how do you feel?
Yeah.
So, but I think it's really important to get those calories in to like top that off. You've not eaten for 2 hours. You're sort of sipping some things on. Mm-hmm. You want to get your fueling. I want to start that race with a full tank. Right. And 2 hours ago I had a meal 2.5 hours ago, and that's starting to digest, and that's set mm-hmm. a good solid base. But right, once you start to swim, and if you're swimming an Ironman, you're going to be in the water for an hour, maybe an hour and a half, maybe 55 minutes. I don't know, but let's say essentially an hour. We said you got about 60 to 90 minutes of before you need to start to fuel in. Yeah. If you haven't topped that off, you may only have 45 minutes because right. you didn't top it off. So you want to make sure that you have that fuel on board. And again, what would you do? Well, before your long outdoor swim, open water swim, practice some of your race nutrition, and then practice that 30 minutes before and go, how did I feel? Yeah. Did I throw it up at like by 20 minutes into the swim mm-hmm. when it came out, right? If you did a 4K swim and a 2 hour bike, just to sort of simulate that, it's a great time to practice your nutrition. Did you feel sort of like on a low when you came out? Did you not feel great? What did you need to do? Do you need to tweak some things? So that way you can figure out what works. That's the complexity. It's simple. You need the calories. Mm-hmm. The complexity is, well, how's it work for you?
But how do you replicate the nutrition you take 30 minutes before a race? Because you and I can go for a practice ride.
Yeah.
And I can be sitting in my truck waiting and take a gel and say, that's set fine. Or if you're sitting 30 minutes before you start an Ironman, your anxiety level's up yeah. and your stress level's up. And that same gel you've practiced every weekend for the last 6 weeks hit you like a bomb. So how do you practice that besides doing practice races, I guess?
Yeah, but that's, you answered it. That's exactly right. I mean, I would practice it on some of like the training stuff, but there's no simulation of a race day. There's nothing like that. Like whether we've geared up for an A race and like all our pennies are in, all our chips are in on that race, there's a little bit more anxiety with it, but we're competitors. I mean, anytime you have a race, there's some pre-race jitters. If I stop getting pre-race jitters, I think I'm going to stop the sport. I love that
stuff. There's a lot of pre-race jitters.
Yeah. So you
realize you're getting ready to go all in.
100%. And how many people sign up for an Ironman or a big A race and they sign up for it and they're like, that's everything I'm doing, but they don't race. I could go a list of like 10 things off the bat of like why racing is great for training, but this is one of them right. because now practice it. And maybe you're doing an Ironman. Well, practice on a half Ironman, practice right. on an Olympic. You're still doing it, right?
You still should get nervous.
You should still get nervous. Right. The intensity is a little bit higher. So I think you're a little bit more sensitive to yeah. the food. So you're going to really have a magnification of whether it's going to work or not work. But I practice that before you do local racing, man. Yeah. I mean, I think that's really key.
Because that, you know, breakfast is the same. Breakfast can be the same, whether yeah. it's a training day or a racing day. But that amount you take in a half hour before
yeah.
is going to sit very different yeah. on a training day than on a race day.
Totally.
Very different.
And you know what's funny? I mean, I don't know about you. Having done this enough, when you get used to this, and my 30 minutes before is pretty much the same it's always been. Mm-hmm. And it's just found its work. And that one stuck for me for a while as far as how it feels. There's a comfort there. Mm-hmm. There's a comfort there for me now. As much as you say there's anxiety, when we're sitting there, we're taking our deep breaths in before the race, that 30 minutes, we've all got our rituals in it. And man, I know your ritual. You probably know mine. I know yeah. Justin's. We've raced so much together that like we right. don't talk, but right. there's a lot of talking through eye contact about right. like what we're about to do. Yeah. When I'm doing and sipping on the things that there's almost like a sense of right. The best, I'm not saying the best athlete, but athletes that are seasoned and athletes that are experienced and the best athletes tend to get in their routines and their rituals. And it's become that for me. Mm-hmm. So it gives me a sense of comfort.
Right.
So what you're saying is like if you haven't found it, you got to test it and you got to try it. But once you get things down, it starts to become, okay, I'm on the clock. I'm thinking about it. If you don't have something to focus on it, your brain tends to like make the anxiety even worse. But right now I'm focusing on this drink and I sort of sip on it. Yep. And I would tell you that some races I've drank the whole bottle. most races I actually drank the whole bottle, but there's several races, a lot of races where I've drank half the bottle.
Yeah.
I didn't drink much. And I just, and I've learned that. Remember lessons from knuckleheads. We've done it wrong enough times to do it right. Right. I've forced bottles down thinking I had to get it, you know, get over yourself. You know, I know you're a little bit nervous, and that always backfired. And then you just start to learn to be intuitive, and you just sort of take what's there. But I would say that that turns into a sense of comfort and, yeah. and practice racing, man. And if you're not racing, race, right? Yeah. There's huge value for workouts, for like transition, for yeah. skill,
yeah.
for getting used to racing's the nerves,
different.
But nutrition.
Racing's different.
Yeah, it's just different, man.
Yep.
This is totally different. One little clinical pearl, and this is not medical advice. This is not right. This is just what we do. So take it with what you do. If you do suffer from some GI stuff, and I use it every long course race, I use Imodium. And that's a trick I learned from a savvy old Ironman vet way back in the day. And it just helps settle my stomach a little bit. Why? Because you're nervous, man. The gastric juices are going up. Cortisol levels are up. And your body's sort of in a different space. So I've found that the Imodium really helps sort of settle things. And in fact, when I'm in an Ironman, I'll even take an Imodium later into the bike as well when I right. transition from the bike to the run. So that's a little thing. And again, where would you use that? You practice that on your practice races, because if you do something on a practice race and it backfires, whatever, dude, it's a learning moment. Yep. But that Imodium, did you ever use Imodium?
No. Yeah. You've talked about it, and I just,
you haven't needed to though.
Yeah, I haven't. Yeah. And I don't think I'm great on nutrition on the back side of the bike or the run. I think I'm really good leading up. I think I load very yeah. well, but I don't know if it's my ADD a little bit, being yeah. so focused on the bike, not having a plan every half hour to eat or drink. And I think as I get to the run, I don't think I do that perfect.
So as a fellow ADHD support group guy, mm-hmm. and the things that you've taught me the most, what is the best thing for that?
Yeah, repetition.
And structure.
Repetition.
Right, repetition yeah. and structure. Yeah. And so, but it's hard, dude, especially an Ironman bike. Mm-hmm. You get the mile, you get the hour four, yeah. and your brain is like,
right.
So here's a little
and the heat and the wind's, wind's blowing you sideways.
You know what I do? I set an auto lap on my bike computer uh-huh. every 30 minutes to go off. Mm-hmm. Just an auto lap, not an alarm or anything. And the auto lap sort of just lets me know where I am and always reminds me I've got, when we get into the caloric windows, have I hit my caloric window? Mm-hmm. Get your X, Y, and Z in. Cause I need, and I need that like Pavlov's dog rattle a little yeah. bell. So that's been helpful. But dude, it'll come back and backfire us. I mean, how many times has it?
Absolutely.
So that's the 30 minutes before. Mm-hmm. And I think you bring up a good point. I think really, you know, practicing that, in training, but definitely races, I think is super key.
Yep.
And then, so now race starts. Right. Race starts. And yeah. it this depends. Right. There's a lot of factors. And I'm going to take the factors out for right now. And maybe we can play around with the factors as we talk about the basic structure. Because don't get on tangents before we get the core of it. Right. It depends on what's the distance. Right. The structure of it is now you've got an hour's worth of fuel. Mm-hmm. An hour after that, you need to have caloric windows that you want to start to hit. And that can, we'll look at that. That's a little bit different maybe on a bike than a run, but you should have knowing what those caloric windows are. And how do we know what the caloric windows are for you? Well, we'll give you a range, like we said, of like maybe 150 to 400 calories. Start with 150 to 200 and see how you're tolerating it. Maybe increase it a little bit. You can actually train your gut. You can process things more as you get used to doing this, but start low and build up. But you should have a caloric number you're trying to hit. And you're on the clock after 1 hour. So from zero, I write out, if you're going to write it out, maybe we can even put this in the show notes. I take a white piece of paper out and I write 0-1:, and then I write free, right? Mm-hmm. That's free. I don't have to worry about anything. And then I write underneath that, I go 1-2. And then I make a little sort of arrow up and an arrow down because I block them into 30 minute blocks. Mm-hmm. And then I go, okay, if I want 200 calories an hour, the top block I want 100, the bottom block I want 100. Because I'm not trying to get 200 in one big swoop.
Fail swoop.
Because I want my body to just sort of slow play that over an hour mm-hmm. so it can process it and I get the resources of it. And then I might put a goo and a water bottle, or maybe it's a goo above and a goo below. It depends on what works for you. Yeah. And then below that, I go hour, 2 to 3. And I put the little arrows up and down, and then I write it out. It's that simple. It is so stupid simple, right? The window goes up and the window goes down. And I see your eyes roll a little bit of like the simple.
I'm not rolling. I've just done it wrong so many times.
Most people have.
It is simple.
Dude, but it is. So here's the thing. I agree with you. I'm gonna be a hypocrite here.
Yeah.
It is that simple.
Yep.
You write it on the piece of paper. The complexity part is like, how's it working for you? What calorie window do you need to hit?
Yeah.
What calories work for you?
How's it feeling during the day?
How's it feeling
can
during
you
the
tolerate
day?
Tolerate it.
Dude, totally. Yeah. On hotter days, it's different to digest things than on colder days. But that's the simplicity of the structure. Yeah. And like all great plans, it's in pencil.
Right.
Right. You're not so rigid that you don't adapt to it. But if you don't make it a keep it simple, stupid plan, and with our brains thinking about different things, it's the structure that you create, and you're constantly getting in, and it can be that simple. And how many times I've seen people who don't have structure that think they're doing their nutrition great. And you go, how's your nutrition? It's great, man. It's on point.
Yeah.
And you go, what are you doing? And then they start to hodgepodge. They give you all the tactics. Mm-hmm. And they got no strategy behind it.
Yep.
And their tactics are consolidated in weird spots to where you're like, well, that's not how it works. Like, it's simple physiology. Your body can process so many grams of carbohydrate.
Right. And you're trying
it's trainable a bit.
Trying to fuel the engine.
You're trying to fuel the engine. And it depends on what you're doing. An Olympic nutrition is totally different beast than an Ironman nutrition. Yeah. But there's no strategy there. And so what we're trying to do with this as a coach, this is what we break it down. Here's your breakfast. Eat breakfast in the morning. Stabilize your blood sugar. Make sure you get protein in, right? Mm-hmm. Don't force it, but don't not eat. Don't have caffeine and a bagel and call it a day.
Right.
And then 30 minutes beforehand, top that off. Otherwise, especially, and I would tell you that if you're going to do an Olympic, you better really top it off. You might get a bit of an insulin spike, but you're about to utilize more of your glycolytic processes. And you're going to take that out. So that's super important 30 minutes before. And then now you got an hour. You're doing a sprint race or you're doing a 10K.
Right.
You ain't got no nutrition. Don't worry about it.
Right.
You do a 15K, sort of depends. A lot of times I don't have any nutrition with that. You do a half marathon. Let's say you run an hour and a half. You actually might get away with that a little bit. But if you're running and you're racing hard, let's say you run let's make it an even 130. Mm-hmm. I would tell you if you had one gel or a couple of cups, it depends on what it is. Again, I don't care what you use, but you need to do something proactively or else you're going to peter out a little bit and you're going to think it's your fitness, your training, you're going to train harder. And you're a car that's on borderline in the red on E, and you're wondering why you can't get more out of the gas pedal putting it down. So that's, to me, that's the simplicity of the structure. Mm-hmm. Right? The first hour is free. You're right. You're depending. Now, going back to what you said, which is caloric matters. Well, you know about what's my A goal, what's my B goal, what's my C goal. I'm going to run a marathon. I'm going to do Boston tomorrow. I would love to run sub 3. So I'm going to map it out to 3. Right. And then I'm also have a contingency plan for when I'm out there for 4
forever.
Yeah. But now I know what I need. And then I start to, I plug in my little system 0 to 1 free, 1 to 2. Maybe I want to hit 300 calories. I put what those are. And then now I have what I want to, when I want to take in, whether it's on course or I need to bring it. And I have that with me and I bring a little extra because I'm going to probably drop one.
Absolutely.
Right? And so always bring a little bit extra because how many races have been ruined by dropping a bottle or dropping a goo, or I thought I had it with me and it fell out of my pocket. I don't know where it went. But you know, ahead of time. Now it's again in pencil because you'll maybe adapt a little bit as you need it, but you're not, as Dr. Herring would say, you're not special.
You're special.
You got to have calories in. It's very much so a caloric game.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't take in as much as you're going to burn, but you can bonk or hit the wall because your carbohydrates are down. And yes, we utilize fats, but carbohydrates are down carbohydrates are a scarce resource and you're out of them. So the most fat adaptive people, and I see people brag about it and say, yeah, I ran a marathon and I didn't need any fuel, because they're an overcorrection to sort of the society today to be like these sugar fiends. And they're like, no, you can do it straight on what we did. And we go, well, absolutely you can. And maybe you ran fast. If you're looking for performance and you're looking for optimal, you're falling short.
You ain't getting it,
You're not getting it. So that to me is the simplicity of it. We went through your breakfast. We went through your top it off before the race, and then have some structure. And now I think we kind of maybe get into some different scenarios or maybe get into hydration where and we'll mix them in together. And then I think at the end, if we kind of talk about, I put together like, I put it together a Boston Marathon nutrition plan and an Ironman nutrition plan, one that, you know, we frequently, something that I've used before to give an example. But that to me is like the most practical, keep it simple nutrition with the complexity of like what works for you.
Right. It sounds simple.
It is.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's hard in the way that like you need to figure out what works for you, but then you gotta do it.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree. So I think you talked about breakfast really well. Talked about 3 minute preload really well, and I do the same thing. I write out for the bike for an Ironman. You know, the first hour, second hour, third, fourth, whatever, however long you're gonna be out there, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 hours, and every hour has a certain amount, and hopefully the calories add up to what I want to add up to.
Yeah.
And I like different things. I can't do the same gel over and over and over. So yeah. I use different things. And hopefully those different things release glucose in a different, you know, slow, quick, that kind of stuff.
And that's where mixing, I mean, that's where you get a vortex too of mixing glucose and fructose. Cause you can process maybe 40 grams of glucose and another 20 grams of fructose. Mm-hmm. So like mixing those, that's where we can get in the vortex. And I think once you get the structure and you get the basic part of it, I think then you can start to figure out what the individual does. But, you know, to your credit and to your humbleness, you were saying, I could probably be better on my nutrition. No, you got it down because you know how many grams of sugar you want to have, you know, what types you want, you know, to vary it a bit. But
I don't always behave.
Yeah, it's hard. Dude, it's hard.
Because, you know, even doing an Olympic.
Yeah.
Right. And to me and to you, because I know how you race. Olympic, your hair's on fire.
Yeah.
For 2.5 hours or 2 hours, 15 minutes or two, however fast you are. Your hair's on fire.
Yeah.
And to be able to think about, I need this, this, and this, it gets hard sometimes.
You know, something that I find that's helpful, and it's different for everybody, but like you got to anchor it to something. You got to anchor it to, you know, and maybe we'll kind of talk about this, especially when we get in the practical side of it, like an Olympic, it's hard because have you ever done math, like simple pacing math when you're exhausted? Like you go, if I run 6:20 for the next 3 miles, how long is, oh dude, I don't know. I don't know. Just keep going. Yeah. Like it's 19 minutes, dummy. So it's hard.
Chasing a deer.
Yeah.
I mean, you're all in exhaustion.
So, but I know you well enough to be like, when do you have your gel?
Not always. I need to have a gel halfway through the bike.
Yeah.
And I've started using gels that are slower release.
Yeah.
So I probably need to have a gel 15 minutes. Like, because I know these edge gels that I take just from using them all the time take about 10 minutes to kick in.
And I'd be curious about this. And this is a kind of a side tangent too, is if you're an Olympic, is UCAN the better choice?
I think it is.
You think so? It's a slow chain release. You're now closer to your threshold.
Yeah.
You need higher glycemic stuff than what UCAN potentially does.
And that glucose is going to kick in T2.
It's going to kick in, but it's not just going to be one big kick in. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a slow release. So if you had that behind it, but in that moment, you need some higher glycemic stuff.
But a guy like me, if I've eaten breakfast well, I have 2,000 calories to burn, right? I have 2,000 calories of glucose to burn. And if I'm racing with courage, I'm going to be in zone 6 from the gun.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to burn much fat.
But I don't think
– I'm not going to burn much fat.
Yeah, but your blood – so even though you had that meal, you're not going to, you don't have access to that all the time through it. You're going to peter. You have it in your stomach. It's in your digestive system. You don't have that instant release and available now because exercise is different than kind of going through the day. Mm-hmm. You don't have that 2000 calories available to you an hour and a half into that race. You do, but not in the moment.
No, that 2000 calories is going to be gone in an hour. And hopefully I have swum.
No, because you're going to burn, even though you're going all out, it's still 1,200 calories. You're still at a, a positive caloric. So I think it's a right. different physiology than that.
So I am, let's just say, so if I have done my homework and I've done good carb, electrolyte, a couple of days leading in.
Yeah.
And I've eaten my breakfast well. And I have raced like I should race with courage.
Yeah.
By about 3 minutes in the bike, I'm at a caloric deficit, right? And so my deficit,
you're out of sugar.
My reactive, well, that's a caloric deficit.
Yeah.
There's no fuel there because I ain't burning fat with a heart rate of 150, right?
No, so, I agree,
so
but
out of sugar. So
yeah,
what I need to do is instead of loading a sugar gel, which hits me immediately, if I'm using Edge, because that sits my gut well, I need to think about that before, right? And then I probably need another gel, you know, my one in the run. But in an Olympic effort run, it's hard for me to get a gel down.
Well, that's why I drink. That's why I'm on sport nutrition.
Spitting. Yeah. Everything's going out,
yeah.
not in.
Yeah, yeah. That's where, I mean, it's interesting. Again, it goes back to like, that's a reasonable theory. And what do? You practice with it. I don't use the UCAN stuff during Olympics or hard stuff because I think the benefit of it is also to me a bit of the liability of it for red line races. I think it's good for non-red line races. But for a red line race, I want something that's gonna hit me harder, quicker, because of what it is. That to me but here's the thing. That's me. That's my response.
Right.
Cause I've used those UCANs and I'm like, it's sort of like, it's too late to the game and it's too low loaded for me. When we go for long, steady or mod hard stuff, mm-hmm. it's great. If I'm mod hard, if I'm in that like zone three, mm-hmm. I think there's some benefit to it. I think, and I actually like the way I've learned to do it for me is I'd layer it. I have some long release stuff like a UCAN, but I have some high glycemic stuff on top of it. And I have the layers of both of them. And I don't have a constant glucose monitor on to show where my spikes are, but I know I feel and I race better mm-hmm. because I'm layering both of those. One of those, it's when it hits you, it's going to release it slowly to you. Mm-hmm. That's the magic of what I will call the superstarge. Mm-hmm. But that's the liability of now. Now I'm closer to threshold. Your carbohydrate utilization is much higher.
Yeah.
And you run out of it much quicker. So I want instant access and I want slow access.
But when you break it down, it's sugar.
It is.
Whether it's slow release or fast release, it's sugar.
Yeah.
Because only glucose, you only break down glucose in the cell to pyruvate to make ATP,
mm-hmm.
right? In my opinion, it doesn't matter how it gets there as long as it stays saturated. And if I have planned well, right, and I keep my muscles saturated with that nutrition, whether it's slow release or fast release, I don't see it making the difference.
I think of it as like, is the hose on half speed or full speed?
It doesn't matter. Because if you're filling up your bottle and your bottle is relatively full, hopefully, because
mm-hmm.
your hydration's, you've planned it out. You've got your paper and you've planned it out.
Yeah.
And you're keeping that glucose level even, right? And your hose is on full. You're going to be sending some glucose into the cell. But if your hose is on mild, you're still sending some glucose into the cell. I don't see.
I think your burn rate is much higher at the higher pace. So your burn rate of the utilization of it.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm off on this. Maybe I'm wrong on this. The burn rate is much higher. I want it.
I mean,
I want
you're
quicker.
Burning more calories.
No, you're burning more carbohydrate.
Well, it's the same, right? Because one,
you're burning
calorie
more calories. Yeah.
4 grams of carbs, right?
Yeah.
That's a conversion.
Yeah.
So if
long yeah, but as if you're burning, let's say you're burning 1,000 calories.
Yeah.
600 of it is carbohydrate, 400 of it's fat. When you go faster, it's going to be 700 carbohydrate and 300. So it's going to change. It's going to evolve. So your burn rate of the carbohydrate is higher.
Right. Absolutely.
So to me, when you use the UCAN, you're getting it, but it's delivering the glucose a little bit slower in a streamline, but I need more access quicker than what it's given me. I know you're getting carbohydrate, but it's not coming to me as quick. And I want, it's sort of like if they're going to give me $100, they're sort of paying me by tens. Mm-hmm. I want to get paid by 20s. Mm-hmm. Give it to me quicker.
Yeah.
Because I'm utilizing quicker. I'm spending cash quicker than what the slow chain is giving it to me. I think it's giving me tens and I want 20s. And actually, I want 10s and 20s at the same time.
But I think a lot of people, this is an overestimation. It's probably not correct. They believe they have to have at that Olympic level.
Yeah.
Where your glucose utilization versus fat utilization, maybe 80-20, it might be 90-10. Who knows? It's high.
It's high.
It's very, very high. Yeah. And so that person who's done their reading and is listening to Lionel Sanders or whoever and says, you need one gel every 30 minutes, let's just say.
Yeah.
So now your gut has this huge sugar load.
No, that's too much. Yeah. Right. Well, this is where we're getting off tangent on it. We're talking about different distances because now we're not talking about like instead of like an Ironman. An Ironman bike, I'm going to try to get 300 and I'm going to be pushing 400 calories an hour oftentimes when I can. I don't do it I cycle it in different hours. When I'm an Olympic, I have 200 calories in an hour on the bike and I have 100 calories on the run. My caloric needs are lower, but I want them quicker and I want them to give them to me now and I want them on a rush. That's my theory. Yeah. That's what's worked for me.
That's great.
So, but that's why, like, I'm not saying
practice it.
Right. Yeah. But that's why I've done it because I remember using the UCANs. I'm like, dude, I feel like I've like somebody like watered down my gel.
Yeah.
Like I need it now. I'm redlined and my body's screaming for more glycogen. And it's like, hey, we're giving you tens, dude. And be like, no, I need 20s now.
Right.
So for me at high intensity, but now when I go long, that's why it evolves. So my nutritional profile for an Ironman is 300 to 400 calories an hour on the bike and about 300 to 350 calories an hour on the run. Why? Because I've tested it. I've tried it in an Olympic, right? That I've topped everything off. The swim is 22 minutes. It's 20 minutes. And I've got the next 40 minutes on the bike. I got 20 minutes left on the bike. Cause a bike for me might be a little bit under an hour.
Yeah.
The swim will be just a little over 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it's an hour and 20 minutes. Reality is like, when we say you start to need to fuel, but reality is if you fueled up well, you got about 60 to 90 minutes.
Right.
So I'm running that threshold. I have one bottle on the bike because that keeps, and I'm doing it earlier because now I'm sort of getting ahead of the game a little bit, but not forcing it down. And then I get off on the run and I have a gel at the 5K mark and I have a high glycemic gel at the 5K mark because I want it like now and I want it in big bulky dollars.
Yeah.
I'm doing something totally different than a long course. And that was only 375 calories in a 2-hour race.
Which is all you need.
That's all I need.
Right.
Right. So that's totally different. Now, when I do long course, to have a sustained chain and to be able to play that game and to be able to go longer. So that's why we talk about like different distances and that's getting more complex, which is probably really good now because we got a simple formula. That's where it gets really hard. And how do we know? We've done it enough times.
Yeah.
If I try to force gels in my system, I'm going to throw up, right? Even if I chase it with water because my body's trying to process that.
Yeah, and you're not used to the sugar load.
Not used to the sugar load. But for me, the UCAN part where I was going with it is I think it's a different way to deliver the same amount. Mm-hmm. I think, and I don't know whether the analogy is – can be supported or not, but in my kind of like I've always got to like maybe create a little bit of an analogy to where like if what I'm feeling, why would I be feeling that? What makes logical sense to me?
Yeah.
And the super starch value is it slow plays the ability to give you the fuel that you need over a longer period of time because of the way it's designed without that insulin spike. And that's a huge value. But I'm playing a different game when I'm my heart's in my throat.
So I'm probably stopping and filling up my Ferrari when it's halfway full.
Yeah.
And you're stopping and filling up your Ferrari when you're 10% from empty.
How so?
So I'm going to load this edge gel, this UCAN gel, hopefully earlier.
Yeah.
And have a slow, sustained release of glucose where you might feel like you need that spike.
So I disagree with that too, because I'm actually, if in that Olympic, if we're still talking Olympic, I've got an hour. I've started the fueling game 30 minutes into the race rather than waiting 60 minutes.
Yeah.
So I've started on that bike and I'm starting to get ahead of it a little bit.
Yep.
And I'm using something like Infinite. And I'm not looking for like, that's why, like, I don't like the old school, like goo gels. I don't use those anymore because those are too high for me.
Right.
So that's, I'm not talking one extreme to the other. I'm not saying you can, or one that's going to be like main veining sugar. I use a pH gel because it's a little bit watered down. It's sort of the best of both worlds. To me, there's a medium release there. It doesn't spike me as much, as much as like a goo gel like I used to use. Yeah. Okay. Or like a Martin's gel, I think works well for me too. I think both of those have worked well. But I'm doing it earlier into that race because fueling for that is a little bit easier. I can be a little bit more proactive. Mm-hmm. And so I'm... The way, if we're going to use that Ferrari part, I'm not waiting until the tank goes down in an Olympic. I'm trying to fill the tank when it's down to 75%. And I want it right back up at 100. Mm-hmm. And then it's down to 75%. I want it at 100. I want to try to keep filling that tank, while I'm still working with some, like a pretty solid amount of tank in there. But I get what you're saying. If you're going to use UCAN, which is a slow release, if you're going to run out of that fuel, you got to factor that in. And if that's the gel that's working for you, and that's the one that's like nailing it for you, you do have to think about doing it earlier than somebody else would, because it's going to take a little bit of time to get there. And dude, in my feeble brain, that's what's rationalized why it works for me.
Right.
Could be totally wrong, but in my brain, it works for me, and it has proven through what I've done, and I've done different things, and certain things haven't worked. And I might be totally, that's a theory, right? Yeah. As good scientists, we come up with theories.
Right.
Hasn't been tested. There's not necessarily a way to test it. We can wear a constant glucose monitor, see how we respond to it. I'm really interested in doing that on a regular basis. I wish that was an easier way. I wish Super Sapiens was accessible here.
Yeah, me too.
Because I've got a lot of theories, and the intuition of what I feel guides me. But the data, no, I'd love to be able to see that.
Yeah, and I think there may be scientific studies out there. I have no idea. It'd be interesting to see that the velocity of the glucose load, right?
No.
How does that affect the conversion of glucose to pyruvate to ATP?
Well, you look at it and you know that your body can process about maybe 40 grams, right? So maybe about 240 calories of glucose.
Be willing to bet you the velocity of glucose load, meaning taking your Infinite, it's a quick hit, versus taking a UCAN, as long as it's the same amount.
I think that's what it promotes though, is that it's a slower ramp into it, and it's delivering it at a slow. I think the hose is on not as fast as the hose on the other ones.
But as long as your hose is keeping your cell relatively, if there's glucose in the system, because the ideal thing would be to be able to speed up the conversion of glucose to pyruvate to ATP.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't know how to do that.
Well, you train your gut too. I mean, there's new studies, especially in Ironman, to show that like you can go from 30 grams an hour and you can start to like get your body to process 40 grams an hour up to maybe 60 grams an hour.
But are you changing the speed of that chemical equation?
Yeah. I don't know.
Smarter to tell
yeah. Us. Yeah. It'd be interesting. As you, again, this is where you can get into like interesting sort of tangent side of it. Okay. My personal experience is by using UCAN in high intensity racing situations, it doesn't fuel me as potently.
Right.
But that comes through practice for me. Right. And you're like, dude, I use it and you raced really well. We're like, dude, stay with it.
Yeah.
Don't not do it. But yeah, no, that's what I've experienced from it. And here's the cool part. anybody listening, that's how complex it can be. Now, here's an interesting part from it. This maybe brings up a really good point. And because we've done this a long time, you're an incredibly intelligent medical doc, and you know a lot about your body, and yet we can have a healthy debate about right. different approaches.
Right.
So next time you go to an expo and the person tells you, you got to do this because this works this way and this will work for you and you should yes. do it race day and you haven't trusted it, you haven't tried it. Reality is, like, my soapbox is nobody knows what's best for you
yeah.
because it may have worked perfectly for them. And what worked perfectly for them will potentially fail for you, yeah. even though you did it the exact same way. So when you get pieces of evidence from things that have worked from other people, mm-hmm. use them, test them, and go, hey, you know what? That's kind of cool. You and I are early adopters. We right. we see something, we're like, yeah, dude, I'll give that a try. Hey, something's working for you. I'm going to give that a try. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try it. And I'm going to try it enough to know and get a feel for it and make sure and manipulate what I use and try to see if it works for me. But if it's not working for me, I'm not going to use it because yeah. it worked for somebody else. And it worked for you,
yeah.
but it didn't work for me. So if you go somewhere and somebody preaches to you that they have nailed, somebody preaches to you, I have nailed your race nutrition. You need to do this, 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 and this, and you are going to have a great race. I find that laughable.
You should run
because it's simple. You need a formula.
Yeah.
The complexity and the muddiness, and you just saw it between, yeah. heard it between Dr. Harry and myself. It's different, man. Yeah. It's totally different. And yeah. you test it and you try it and you find what works. And then you advocate for what, yeah. what you're doing. And then you come up with, and with the way we think about it, we're like, okay, well, what's the mechanism?
Right.
Right. If the mechanism is, and this is how, you know, Krebs cycles works and, right. and we're breaking things down. Mm-hmm. And then you come up with theories and then guess what? We are the anecdotal evidence.
Right.
We are the evidence. That's like, if the theory makes sense, I'm going to test it. And then, you know, you went into that phase a long time ago about like trying to like keep your sugars down.
Right.
Which, you know, there's studies. That's the thing with studies, and you can talk about this even more than me. You see studies that tell you one thing, but reality is like they don't just tell you everything. You can extrapolate what you want from them. Mm-hmm. The research, especially in the nutrition world, is not as clear as what, especially when people go to PubMed and they want to talk about it, and then they talk about a study that they said that cites this, and they are certain about that, and be like, no. The more you're certain about something, the more you got to check it.
We're nervous.
Yeah.
We're nervous.
You're testing in your self-experience. Now, pick up, like, that's what my hope from you from this is we're talking about what we do. Mm-hmm. We've done it a long time. We're arguably experts in the area of what we're doing, but it changes and evolves and we use different things yep. and what works for you works different for me. So, you know, go back to the formula and test it and play around with it and have your theories. And then there's no better testing than good races.
Good racing, yeah.
Good racing.
Did it work?
Did it work?
Yeah.
Right. And that's here's the other muddy part. There's so many other things that can go along with it. Did you pace yourself well? Mm-hmm. Right. Were you trained for it? Nutrition yeah. plays a role in it.
Yeah.
And you can get away with sloppier nutrition in an Olympic than you can with a half. And you can get better, you can get away with more and a half than you can a full. It becomes right. more and more important. And the demands are different. So the fueling strategies change a little bit, but the windows are there. My windows for a full Ironman are bigger than my windows are for an Olympic.
Right.
And I've learned that over time, but the windows are there. The thing is within that hour, you've got an hour to get it in the same physiology there, which is you're going to peter out about an hour into it. And if your fueling source takes a little bit of time to get in there, you got to factor that in and right. bring it in a little bit sooner. Like you're talking about, it's a timing problem.
Right.
a timing problem. Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So I think that's a really sort of neat way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Clear as mud.
Clear as mud. So here's a situation for you. One of your hub athletes.
Yeah.
Okay. They are scheduled to run the Boston Marathon.
Yeah.
Okay. Their training runs have all been great. They've have practiced their pre-race meal and coffee and gone to the bathroom perfectly. Okay. Now they hear from the race that they're in wave 14. So now their race start time is 10:45.
Mm-hmm.
So they're getting up in the hotel. they're eating their breakfast, and now their timing is off, maybe.
Yeah.
That becomes, you have to kind of adapt to that as well.
Yeah. What do you mean their timing's off? Just so, timing later, a little bit later than what they thought?
Yeah. So instead of somebody gets up and is used, they have practiced getting up at 6 or 5:30 and eating their pre-race meal and going out for a run at 7:30, right?
Or, yeah, but that race didn't suddenly decide to start at 10:45. So some of the long runs start later. Right, yeah. Get used to that because it's going to throw you off the rhythm.
Yeah, but you may not be able to eat on the bus. Go on there. There's some complexities there. Can you eat and drink your coffee on the bus going out?
We've been out there. You can have your breakfast, and then you can have your electrolyte drink, and you can sip on it.
Yeah.
You can have a Fig Newton. You can have a snack. You can eat some like just an extra little snack that's there. So you can. Doesn't mean when we said breakfast in the morning and then 30 minutes before, well, there's a longer delay in there, you can also have a whole food sort of small snack.
Right.
That also settles the gastric juices of the nervousness that are there. But like you said, what are they going to do? You're going to practice that timing because it's going to throw you off.
Yeah.
Right. That's when we had the interview with Kira. That's what I thought was like really crappy for these professional athletes that run. And that's the time that they're scheduled to run. That's what time normal racing is.
Yeah.
They change it for TV schedules.
Yeah.
They did get my heads up so they could get used to it. But it also changed the environment and the weather that they're in.
Yeah.
And heat plays a factor. And heat's not we always say that the weather's the same for everybody. Mm-hmm. That's true. But people's different physiologies about how they tolerate heat. What's their sweat concentrate? What's their sweat volume?
Yeah.
Compared to what their sweat concentration is. Mm-hmm. And it's not a fair playing game. There's some people that have a genetic advantage in heat while others don't. It's not like we're all running in the rain and you're complaining about the rain. So we know what time that race starts. And so you should have some preparation. You don't have to do every long run like that, but it shouldn't be foreign to you on race day. So I think that's something that if that runner is nervous about, that they got to factor in.
Know the race, know the starting time, and know that.
Yeah.
But that's pre-race planning, right?
So this is what sparked this podcast a little bit, is I wrote out a nutrition sort of a plan for one of my athletes racing tomorrow. And it was even like, what are you going to do on the bus? Yeah. Here's what I would suggest you do on the bus, right? Here's your breakfast. Here's your bus ride. Then on top of it, you get the bus ride. Then you're sitting in elementary school for a while.
And then you're just forever.
Yeah, you're sitting there forever. What are you going to do nutrition? And there needs to be some nutritional guidance along there. Again, in pencil, not pen, and some practice with it. So like we wrote that into his plan. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't foreign to me. I know where that is. And if he's maybe 20 minutes later or 30 minutes later in start time, that shouldn't disrupt his mental state all that much. But if they woke up and said that like, hey, Boston was going to start at 7, today's going to start at 10:45. Yeah. That's going to throw you off a little bit, but planning, structure, planning and structure and practice. That to me is like, hopefully, like I told you in the beginning, it's really simple. It's really hard. I think maybe hopefully we displayed both of those, you know, and then you start to tackle a little bit, what's hydration with it. Right. And that's probably a different
podcast.
Conversation, a different podcast. That's the nutrition part. But hydration, electrolyte is an important component of nutrition. But today's podcast, we're talking calories.
Right.
We're talking fuel. We're talking carbohydrate. And we're talking about you not running out of energy, especially if the race is going to be longer than 90 minutes, you must have a nutrition plan. The closer it is to 90 minutes, the easier the nutrition plan is, the longer you're out there, the longer it is. If you run like an ultra, right? An ultra marathon, and you're out there for 20 hours,
days.
The pace is slower and you're using way more fats than you are carbohydrates. Yeah, hopefully. And your carbohydrate needs are different when you're going longer like that, right? You need to have a steady stream going in. But if you're really metabolically efficient, and most ultra athletes are because they go zone 2 more than anything else, that they can utilize higher levels. So you can see the fueling needs of a 100-mile endurance athlete be much lower per hour than that of a half Ironman athlete or an Ironman athlete. But again, it's just a different profile. But there's a formula. You should be doing it proactively if you're looking for performance, right? You really want to look for performance. You're trying to get to the closest of what you're physically able to do. And I've seen many races that are blown up because there was no strategy, no formula going into it, even when they thought there was, because they took fuel during. I took something every hour, starting at hour two. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you're behind the game, man.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
Yeah. I don't know. Hopefully that makes sense. I think,
at least you start to look at your own needs.
Yeah.
What your gut can tolerate, find a product you can tolerate and stick with it.
Yep. Have a plan for breakfast.
Yeah.
Have a plan for just before the gun goes off, have a nutritional outline for when the race starts, practice it, mess around with it. Use practice races as a good time to, try some things. And then the old adage of like, don't try anything new race day. I don't care what the expo says. Stick to your tried and true and tested things that have been working for you. And then hopefully this helps you create maybe an outline of what you'd want to practice. We don't have the answers for you. We just talked about how we disagreed about the things that we would use.
Right.
And here's the thing. We're both right.
Right.
Right. It works for us.
So how do you practice Coke on a run?
Oh, dude, I got a good story with that. You practice by using it, right? Do you use Coke on an Ironman?
Well, we can argue about that a little bit. So I know that you and Justin go to Coke immediately on a half, or I don't know what you go to in full.
Yeah.
But I can only start it late in the game, so that the second half of an Ironman run, the second half of a half, because my gut starts to not go good, and I start getting headaches.
Yeah,
so it's fuel, but I don't practice with it.
I don't practice with it much, and it's funny. I won't go on side. I use it quickly in most, and actually, you know what? Finally, kind of like made me sort of push it a little bit earlier was back in the day reading Macca's book, I'm Here to Win. Mm-hmm. And he had talked about going to it sooner because my big thing was like, I won't do it to the second half, especially it's a diuretic. You're going to lose some hydration. And studies actually show that that's not true.
It's not true.
Because it's hydrating you as much as what you're losing.
You just got to tolerate it.
You got to tolerate. But that's where I've learned from testing and practice. There's some races I can tolerate it more than others. And how do I know? I start off with it early and I have two cups of Coke, two cups of water. And anytime I feel like my gut is in pretty good spot, I have two Cokes, two waters. And if I feel like I need a break from it, I take two carbohydrate drink and two waters. So I just sort of naturally know how my gut is doing. My gut can be different on different days, can be different depending on how it tolerated what I did on the bike. And I just talked about this amazing plan that we put together. And we also talked about how, like, when you're on the bike and you're on the bike that long, sometimes you get off course a little bit and you sort of like get that brain fog.
Yeah.
And there's other times when I'm on it and it's worked perfectly. And there's other times I got to adapt. There's other times I've not had Coke at all because I was like, if I have Coke, that stuff's coming back up.
Right.
So I go to it early, but I also know that you got to be careful with it. You take caffeine gels.
Sometimes
I don't take caffeine gels because I want that caffeine on the run. So I don't have any caffeine because caffeine's got an 8-hour shelf life. And that's a different podcast about if you want to look to see what the optimal amount of caffeine is per kilogram of body weight, you should look at that because it's a performance enhancer up to a certain point and then it's destructive.
Destructive, yeah.
So you might not have a Coke problem. You might have a caffeine problem, right? And you start to look at it. It might be, but Coke's hard because it's, especially when it's not flat, but it's high glycemic. It's high glycemic. It makes you realize that like why have people like have Coca-Cola and sit on the couch. Why it's so bad for you? Because for me, it's like Popeye eating spinach.
Crazy.
It's great. It's sugar and caffeine, man.
Crazy.
It's magic. So, but how do I practice it? I don't use it very much. One of my favorite things, and we've done enough times on a long ride, long hot ride, you know, there's nothing like making a store stop and just getting a can of Coke and drinking a bit of it and to throw it out. So I like to have that sugar and caffeine. So I use a little bit of it there, but that's more selfish because I'm like, it's a pick me up.
Yeah.
But I run in my neighborhood and I'll like, let's say I have a 3-hour run And I've got a loop in there that I'll like maybe pass. I try not to loop a ton because to me, psychologically, it's just like a tease to like stop. So I set up these little mini aid stations with like a little igloo cooler that's there. And I put my what I plan on using race day, whether it's on course or whatever it is, and Coke's part of it. And so it was a few years ago, it was actually 5 or 6 years ago. It was pretty soon when we moved into our new neighborhood. And I had a igloo cooler there, and it was like 90 degrees. It was probably only like 8:30 in the morning. And I opened the cooler and I poured some water in my head. I drank a little bit of Gatorade and I started chugging this Coke. And one of my neighbors came up to the stop sign as I was chugging it and stopped and looked to the left and saw me and gave me about the most quizzical look you can get of another human being. Yeah. What the hell is wrong with this guy? And I threw it back in, and he didn't know that like I'm practicing with the fuel I want race day because I was doing pacing work. I wanted to see how my stomach, and plus I wanted to get used to it, and I wanted to train my gut. I'm training my gut for it. I saw him at a party like 2 or 3 weeks ago, just down the house, and he came up to me and he's all quiet and he's kind of talking about race, and then he looks at me and he goes, "So, why are you chugging a Coke, man?" And it made you realize that like they have no idea why would you be doing a healthy sport like running,
right,
and then you're chugging a Coke on top of it? I thought you like go to run to burn all that stuff off. And I just thought that was hilarious because he was just an awesome guy and thought I was like a crazy weirdo, yeah, but I'm practicing with it. I had set up aid stations to practice with it and see how my body responds and hopefully not use it too much, but also train my gut to tolerate it.
Right.
But I wouldn't do that every weekend or else I'm going to rot my teeth out.
Right.
And it's not good for you. It's
toxic.
Yeah.
Coke is toxic. And, you know, one of our good friends who we train and race with a lot, he goes to Coke.
Yeah.
And quickly. And, you know, we were at camp in the North Carolina mountains, I don't know, 8 years ago. And we had a bike stop. We were all smoked.
Yeah.
Just smoked. We'd been riding for 4 or 5 days. And this guy, he gets on a couple of Cokes and a cream horn.
Ugh.
And he just destroys us for the next 2 hours.
That's my support for high glycemic sugars when you're bonked.
Right. We were all bonked. But yeah. He loaded up on Coke.
Yeah.
He ate one of these nasty cream horns at one of these gas stations and just destroyed us.
Big shout out to Justin.
For like and 2 hours.
Every time we pass a store, we yell out cream horn, I think. But I mean, a big part of why I want IV at the end of an Ironman is probably from all the damage Coke did to me, man. I mean, I can feel it. It's funny. I don't know about you. And if you're starting it later, I can feel the negative effects of the Coke probably about mile 22. And I start to almost I can feel the headache from it.
I get a headache from
it. Yeah. So and if I time it right, I get all the benefits, but then when it's over, I'm like, oh dude, I feel like you know how, like if you put a rusty screw in Coke, it cleans it out.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like it's eating away my organs. Organs. Because
you've had 2 cups every 2 miles the last 3 hours.
It's broken up a little bit, but I'd say you've probably had about 6 cups every hour.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's eating my insides out. My kidneys are no longer rusty. Yeah. Yeah, you can see holes through my liver. Mm-hmm. That's magic. Yeah. That's magic. So practice.
Right. That's your race day nutrition.
Giddy up.
Lessons from the Knuckleheads.
All right, so lessons from Knuckleheads. In the same scope as what we talked about, you know, one of the things that I think mentioned early into it, but maybe didn't clarify a little bit about is the osmolality of the calories that you have in, which is the concentration. Your gut has a hard time, like if you take a goo in, right, it's a high concentration of carbohydrate. It's not so watered down. A lot of gels have been out there about promoting you can take without water. Some of them work better without water, Some of them can work without water. I still find that I always chase them with water because it dilutes it. So some lessons from Knuckleheads is if when you take your gels, take them at the water stops and chase them with at least 8 ounces of water, dilute that in your system.
Yep.
So we see a lot of people that go, "Oh, gels don't work for me." But reality is a lot of times they haven't diluted enough. And some gels don't work for people. Right. I think we were talking about it. You got gels that some work for you. I remember the Heed stuff that used to be out there. I used to call it Heave because anytime I had it, it was like, for me, it was revolting.
Terrible. Yeah.
And other people loved it. But lessons from Knuckleheads, I've taken gels just in a pinch, and it's not worked out well, and you get GI distress, and it's pretty hard to come back from GI distress once you have it. So lessons from knuckleheads is chase your gels with water. How about you?
It's a good one. No, I think that's very good. You got to hydrate.
Hydrate, man.
Along with it.
All right, so race day nutrition, clear as mud. But, you know, I think that was pretty cool because you can see all the, you know, different approaches to it and different products at work. But I think if we look at it and we summarize it, we made it really simple, like, you know, factor in breakfast, right? Make sure you get your proteins in, stabilize your blood sugar. Try to do that 2-3 hours before your race. I would try to top your fuel tank off 30 minutes before. Right. Before the race, figure out what works for you. Try some practice races. You start to figure out what works for you. And then once you're in the race, you got an hour and you're fueled up. And after that hour, start to have some sort of strategy. Have a plan, have some structure, practice that, refine it, you know, steal some ideas from other people and try them yourselves, but start to figure out. And as you can see, like I've got a different nutritional profile for your short course than I do for long course. But that comes through trial and error. And I've got products that, you know, I gravitate to. Moose, you got products you Absolutely. Gravitate to, and they work for us. And you know, while we all seem so similar, yet we're so different. And that's the formula. Go in with some structure. Don't just like shoot from the hip. And test it and see what works. And the best thing is like races that have gone well, right? And try to replicate that. And races that didn't go well, look at your nutrition. That should be factored in. Don't just have that be a given. There's other factors that could have gone south. Maybe you didn't pace yourself well. But there's no out racing poor nutrition. And hopefully maybe that formula can make it easy. But hopefully during that podcast too, we showed you how it gets confusing. You know, there's not exact evidence out there about exactly what you should do. And there's conflicting things, and you'll hear from friends and they'll contradict one another. And I would say that, you know, potentially both are right. Yep. Maybe both are wrong, but either way that like, there's not one approach, but you know, your body can process so much. And you got to figure out what that is and what works for you. What are your thoughts?
I think that's very good. We're all different and you've got to figure out what works with your machine.
Yeah.
But you got to have a plan.
Have it, man. A lot of marathons, especially marathoners. And Ironman, not as much, because Ironman, it's so important you have your nutrition. I see a lot of marathoners in particular, who really don't have a structure to it. And I'm talking really savvy marathons. And marathoners that sometimes have what look like really good results. But if you look at their times relative to what they know that they could run, you know, they petered out at the end. And they're looking for that like training to fix that last, why am I fading at mile 20? Why am I cramping at mile 20, right? And nutrition has got to be a really important factor in, and you've got to have some structure behind it. So hopefully with this podcast, you can see some of the simplicity within it, which is, you know, create that outline, you write it on a white piece of paper, put it in, you know, Evernote, put it in whatever you use as a filing system, come back to it, refine it, you know, look things up, see what other people use, and practice and see if you like it, and see if it works for you. And then, you know, stuff that does, then start to like stick with it. So like we said, clear as mud.
Woof.
So I don't know about you. This podcast made me hungry.
It's time for a Fig Newton.
Yeah, man. So as always, Hub Life, hubtrainingcenter.com. Yeah. We're Instagram, Facebook. Just appreciate all the feedback that we're getting. Just lots of really cool things. Yep. Kier's interview was just phenomenal. If you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to it. Just, you know, of all the podcasts we've done, I think that has been, you know, the most response that we've gotten back from. Yeah. Boston Marathon, I had a lot of people reach out and say, hey man, thanks a lot. Yeah. That was really, really helpful. So if you have any thoughts or any ideas you'd like us to cover, please do. Follow Dr. Herring's Instagram page. That's cool stuff on there. What is it again?
Moose Herring MD.
Moose Herring MD, man. I saw a post that you put up there. I thought it was just so perfect about rotator cuff and tears and people sort of rationalizing it, not dealing with it, and the complications that come later because you didn't deal with it early. And it just was such a great reminder of like, deal with it now.
Right.
And if you don't deal with it now, there's some long-term consequences. And so, you know, that's true not only for rotator cuff repair and what you pointed out, but in so many different ways. So if you're dealing with something, right, find somebody you really trust and is in the community that that has great results. And, you know, Dr. Herring, top doc, congratulations.
You too. Yeah,
so you too. Richmond Magazine. But always remember, man, deal with your issues. So as Dr. Herring would always say, when you come to a fork in the road,
go uphill.